Come on in.
Celeste, hello. Hi, Stephen.
Hi, nice to meet you. Hi, nice to meet you.
Thanks for coming.
I know, Prof, you've been a whistleblower before.
Wow, that's it.
Last week, I just had a call from a whistleblower.
Oh, why did they come to you?
Somebody called me, you know, and I had a conversation for about half an hour with her. And she mentioned a company and the problem she faced when she blew the whistle, right? So,
okay.
So I get lots of those kinds of stuff.
Wow, this sounds like a spy movie. We kick off a story that's been brewing for a month now. It's the sacking of three executives at SingPost.
Ah, I guess the mail got stuck there. But SingPost, yes, has sacked its top three executives, including its CEO, due to what it called their grossly negligent behaviour in the handling of internal investigations into a whistleblower report.
That's right. So when we did some research, we found that Singapore does not have legislation to protect whistleblowers. But if you go to any whistleblowing site, for example, your company, and you have a form, it says we'll protect you. For example, there's a Corruptions Act. So if you're an informant, your identity will be protected. So explain to our listeners, what's the difference between legislation versus the local protections that we have?
At the moment, you know, there isn't an overarching whistleblowing legislation that protects or, you know, that gives obligations to whistleblowers or to protect, you know, whistleblowers. But there are certain legislations, as you mentioned, the Prevention of Corruption Act, some Betting Act, and a few other legislations where it does give limited protection. So witnesses, for example, you know, are not, you know, may not be compelled to give the names of the informants, for example. So the whistleblowers are protected from their identification. But, you know, those legislations, you know, are fairly specific to the context of it. But as I said, there's generally no overarching legislation which protects whistleblowers.
So in other words, it's just the company's word that we will protect.
That's right. So that would form a contractual obligation of the company to the whistleblowers who actually rely on these policies to give information to the company. So there is limited protection in the sense that it comes in the form of a contractual kind of obligation where the company will say, if you follow these procedures, we will not retaliate against you just because you blew the whistle.
Right. Like, they won't sack me.
That doesn't sound very reassuring, right? Because I'm in a company, something goes wrong.
Yeah.
I want to tell, but they say, make sure you fill out form ABC, answer this question, send it to HR, then I will listen to you.
Yeah. And reprisals take many forms, right? I mean, it's not just sacking, right? I could give you a bad performance review. I could just... You know, look at you in a different way. There are various ways they can intimidate, right? So, and then the other question is, if there is in fact reprisal, you know, what appeal mechanisms, right? Do the employees actually have a good mechanism within the organization, right? And if the organization doesn't care, what recourse does the employee actually have?
Right.
And I think that's the difference when you have countries which have kind of overarching kind of whistleblowing legislation where you may have an avenue you could go to make a complaint if you feel there have been reprisals. And it can also provide additional protection. Like sometimes when you blow the whistle, you may expose yourself to civil liability. For example, right, you take a company document and you go and blow the whistle. Right, the company may say that is company property, right?
Yeah.
Right? And or you get sued for defamation, for example, right? So there are various risks, right? So legislation can be helpful in terms of having that additional layer of protection.
The first thing that came to my mind was, well, the civil service, for example, or public servants, right? Many of us signed the Official Secrets Act. So then, like, I'm thinking, okay, if I have to whistleblow against somebody, let's say a senior director, and the evidence I have is secret document, for example.
How do you do it?
How do I do it?
Yeah.
Because then I'm in breach of what I signed as a part of my employment contract, right? Have you come across cases like this?
And if you look at some statutory boards or even ministries, right, where they actually say you can whistleblow, then they ask you to, you have to submit documents, for example.
Yes.
They say you shouldn't just whistleblow. You need to have a reasonable basis, right? Then you need to submit evidence. No, then you have a situation. Let's say you are not in a civil service, but in a company you have signed an NDA. Or, you know, then how? When you kind of attach documents, are you exposing to itself, right, to civil liability risks and so on?
Does it begin that all the contracts we sign are pro-company, pro-employer in the sense that because they are worded such that in the event I want to do something against the company, it becomes very difficult.
Well, that's true to some extent. But I would say that, you know, in recent years, at least in my experience, you know, advising companies on their whistleblowing policies and processes, there is a lot of focus now to ensure that there is safeguards to maintain the integrity of the whistleblowing programs.
Okay.
So there will be assurances given to the whistleblower. But at the same time, in terms of the level of information that's given, I mean, just to address the question as well, obviously the company needs to make sure that there is a process to look into these complaints such that whistleblowers don't also abuse the whistleblowing processes.
Yeah,
as well.
I shouldn't just say that this guy is stealing money without any evidence.
But
right?
at the same time, you must give the reassurance that somebody who sees something wrong that's happening is able to speak freely without fear of further repercussions, regardless of what your contract might say.
And also, under what situation you can blow the whistle? I mean, there's one ministry, right? If you look at it, they say if you want to report a violation, you must be certain. It uses a term certain. I say there are only two things that are certain, right? Death and taxes, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Right? Nothing else. You know, everything else we just don't know for sure.
Mm.
So when you use a term like this, how is he or she going to assess? I may never be certain. So sometimes
so
I think companies need to, organizations need to look at how they word their policies and so on too.
So this is where the lawyers come in.
Yeah, exactly. So in recent years, you know, companies have been improving their whistleblowing policies such that the focus is on compliance and ensuring that there is good ethical conduct across the organization. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to the whistleblowing, so instead of saying that you must be certain before you whistleblow, they do want to encourage whistleblowers to come forward if there are actually real issues there. So they will be looking at terms like good faith or bad faith.
Yes.
Are you whistleblowing in good faith or bad faith?
Yeah.
Then, you know, and that it's not frivolous, for example, and you're not, you know, yourself abusing the whistleblowing.
Okay, just help our listeners understand. What do you mean when you say in good faith?
So in good faith would be that your intentions for blowing the whistle is not, you know, for a ill motive, like you're just trying to sully somebody's name, for example.
Mm-hmm.
The policies are in place to encourage people to come forward sooner, as long as the person doesn't have an ill motive, right? Like I said, to sully somebody's name, to defame somebody, to bring somebody down, you know, even though there's actually no reasonable basis to even blow the whistle in the first place.
When I went on to one of the websites and I tried to look at the form, it asked me for quite a lot of detail.
Yep.
So it says optional, right, Celeste?
Yeah, correct.
But even I'm the typical Singaporean, very cynical. Like, even if I don't put my name, can they trace me?
Yeah.
I think when it comes to that, as to whether you can have a confidence in the integrity of the whistleblowing program or the processes, they need to put in some effort to assure the people that the whistleblowing program is actually an effective and, you know, one that has got integrity.
Right.
So which is why I mentioned earlier on that with a lot of whistleblowing program, the tone from the top is key, right? So you need to make sure that the management and executive are committed to that whistleblowing program.
Right, not to consider it like a pain in the, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. But it's a real risk, right, of people fearing that they'll be traced. A few months ago, actually, I was on a panel discussion in an international conference, and it was actually on whistleblowing. And I was shocked when one of my fellow panelists who works for a service provider said, you know, I was working for this company, and they had a whistleblowing complaint, and we used technology to find out who the whistleblower is. And I was almost going to throw my notes at him or my whatever, and kind of my jaw was kind of dropping.
Yeah.
People always, you know, they still have that fear. That's why some companies say, we better outsource it to a third party to manage the hotline, for example, rather than...
Then again, I mean, you want to find out who is crying foul to find out whether it's legit or not at the same time, right?
Yeah.
So finding out who whistleblowed, in a sense, is not necessarily a bad thing. And the whistleblower shouldn't be afraid of owning what they said if it's really true, right? We kind of have this conundrum.
But there's a lot of repercussions, okay? So this is the other thing, right? There are examples where a whistleblower's life was made a living hell, you know, where, like you say, you know, these are powerful organizations, right?
Mm.
People lose their jobs.
Yep.
So why would anyone still stick their neck out? So, Prof, maybe you can share your own experience.
Yeah. How were you a whistleblower? Yeah. That was, we're really curious.
Well, I should be, you know, I've blown the whistle in different contexts, right? Okay. Sometimes as a
mine's
outsider.
Only at a football game, yeah.
Sometimes, sometimes as a outsider discovering information, I've blown the whistle to listed companies with very specific information and the experience. I put my name down. I'm not afraid, but I do receive, you know, even at my university, people will send me letters, totally sealed, addressed to be opened only by me,
of
stuff.
Your life is very interesting.
Some people are really afraid. At the end, right, whistleblowers are those who really, they don't have this bystander syndrome, right? They kind of feel that, you know, something is not right. I should do something. Of course, some people blow the whistle because they are directly caught. The real whistleblowers to me are those really, you know, nothing to do with them. It doesn't affect them directly, but they just come across it and they just don't think it's right, right?
Mm.
So there are different types of whistleblowers. Some people just generally feel that something is not right and I should do something about it.
For example, if I'm whistleblowing against my boss, I say my CEO, the board will have to get involved, right? But the board works with the CEO quite closely.
Mm.
So is there a possibility that there might be some bias in the process of going through this?
One natural reaction is, it can't be, right? We know the CEO. And sometimes CEOs are very good in managing up too. A lot of people are very good in managing up. So you see that side of the CEO. I think boards and audit committees need to look at it very objectively. And then you then have to decide if possibly the CEO could be involved, then you need to keep the CEO out of that process.
Yeah.
Or even the direct report of the CEO, you also need to be very careful because, you know, the CEO may well protect the direct reports, right? So you need to think carefully in terms of if it's a very low-level complaint, maybe, you know, CEO may get a little bit more involved. But if it's a high-level complaint against very senior people, the senior management themselves, then you need to be very careful in terms of how you get a CEO kind of involved.
You must have an independent function that oversees the whistleblowing program for your listed companies.
Yes.
But I would say most companies, even if they're not listed companies, where they do have a robust whistleblowing program, will ensure independence as key. So where you have senior management involved and you feel that perhaps the audit committee or board members, right, perhaps the audit committee who reports to the board may not be able to discharge a function, then it behoves the board to then say, okay, maybe we should outsource this to external, wholly external
consultants. But it's a maybe. How much could culture play in part of this? Because in our Asian culture, we're a bit more less likely to whistleblow without exploring many of the other options first, you know. And because we think of all the possible consequences that at the end of the day, I may lose my job because my company gets in trouble, pay a big fine, no money, close department, things like that. So,
or even the possibility that somebody else might lose their job.
So you probably find that in the Asian context, right? I mean, partly also a hierarchical organization, you know, society and so on. You tend to think the boss is right, those kind of stuff. There's a little bit of that, you know, but often, I think you'll find maybe more complaints, anonymous complaints, poison pen letters to regulators. You'll probably find a fair bit of that. Why is important for organizations to have good whistleblowing policy? Because if you don't have one, it's more likely employees will go externally. And once you go externally to a regulator, you may lose any control you have in terms of how you manage the investigation and the process, right? I mean, so I think it's in the organization's self-interest to have a good whistleblowing policy. You shouldn't discourage, you shouldn't tell people you don't report to external regulators because I don't think you should do that. But once you have a good internal policy, employees trust the policy, they are more likely to say, okay, I'll blow the whistle internally and then you can do your own investigation and then manage the process properly.
How transparent should companies be when they have a whistleblowing report that they're dealing with?
There are also quite a number who said they receive zero reports. Those are the most interesting to me. If you are a big company and you say you receive zero reports, you should start looking at your whistleblowing policy.
Exactly.
Whether it's working. I've been in organizations, as you know, international organization or the advisory committee. And one of the questions I always look at, how many complaints come through the whistleblowing channel? If I feel there are very few, I will start asking questions, is it really working? Are employees aware of the whistleblowing policy? Are they scared? Mm-hmm. You need to ask those kind of questions. That's where the audit committee needs to come in and kind of ask. Don't say, hey, zero complaints. Yay, you know, we don't have to do anything, right? So you shouldn't have those kind of reaction.
So in a way, it's not realistic to expect an MNC, a huge company, to have zero on their report, right?
I think zero is a red flag.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, wow, really?
Exactly. Yeah. If you have zero coming to the whistleblowing programs, there's something that's wrong.
I just thought that it means that it was a very ethical company, right?
No, wait,
but there are different levels of whistleblowing, right? I mean, people complain about all sorts of things, right? So, but to just say that nobody's complaining, everyone's like happy.
That's interesting. Transparency is important, but it may not be something that you report publicly, right? But certainly, you're right, the audit committee, the board should know how many are coming in because it's also an indicator, as I said, of whether the whistleblowing program is actually working or not. Right. But like, as I said, zero is a big red flag.
But if you have too many, it means your program is too good. I don't know. It's like,
if you have too many, right? Okay.
So if it's probably your compliance program.
If it's too many, you've got to ask whether you have a culture issue with the organization too. But and then you have to ask whether your whistleblowing policy is clear enough, because the whistleblowing policy is not intended to be just a normal grievance channel. I have a bad performance review and I think it's unfair. You know, I should go to the whistleblowing hotline. I mean, that's not where you should go to, right? Yeah. So I think that's where having a well-crafted whistleblowing policy, which very clearly specifies what kind of things you should make through the whistleblowing channel. Yeah.
To understand, some organizations even, not say reward, but are willing to give money in return for whistleblowing reports.
It's in some, but it's not, I don't see it that common.
Yeah,
it's not that common in most of the whistleblowing programs, which, you know, we have seen.
In
they want to make people do the right thing without just wanting to do the right thing to get a reward.
For the money.
No. So in the US, of course, you have all sorts of legislation, all have whistleblowing protection, right? And also rewards. And you can have, I think the largest was hundreds of million or even more than a billion payout to a whistleblower.
Wow.
But usually it's not by the organization themselves. I mean, these are, you know, regulators, when they extract a penalty from the company, the whistleblower gets a share, right?
Yeah.
And of course, in Singapore, the Inland Revenue Department or authority, you know, IRAS, will kind of give you a share up to $100,000.
Okay.
I do training for directors, right? Sometimes I pose them, you know, have you ever recognized, you know, always have employee of the month. Have you ever recognized somebody who blows the whistle, right? Because
whistleblower of the month? I don't want to be on that.
Not kind of identifying them, right? To say somebody has done the right thing. So when I was talking about this in one session, and one of the directors said, I was in this company. And they have a new the CEO kind of, she noticed that on the wall there were these pictures of employees with the face blank out. And they kind of said this employee did what? And they were all whistleblowers, did the right thing. So this was how the CEO was trying to say, you know, these are employees who help the organization. We should recognize them. I don't think whistleblowers, the one who are genuine, necessarily ask for a reward. Actually, the IRAS one is interesting. Some years ago, IRAS said that there were many people who were not claiming the rewards, even though they were entitled to it. It's kind of interesting. So they feel that they want to do the right thing, not necessarily because they want to extract a reward. Recognition can be different ways, right? It may not be monetary in nature, right? So
that's so interesting. I wonder whether the IRAS reward is taxable.
Maybe that's why. If I take it, I pay more taxes. Yeah.
It's okay. You can keep it. I don't want to pay tax on your reward.
But at the end, whistleblowers, right? You know, I think back about the case that I was involved in where the whistleblower blew the whistle against the CEO and COO. I reflect back, if the whistleblower had not blown the whistle, the damage it would have caused to the organization, because she blew the whistle, it kind of protected the organization from much more severe consequences. No? And that's why I think they deserve to be recognized in some way.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
I think culturally, you know, I would say in Asia, even though in the past there used to be, you know, a reticence in terms of reporting, I would say generally there is greater awareness now of the importance of a whistleblowing program, right? So, I mean, we've got legislations which are upcoming, for example, the workplace fairness legislation that's coming up.
Yep.
So there is, you know, mandated there a grievance process and there are protections given against retaliation for whistleblowers, for example. So there is definitely greater awareness now, more publicity of protections, you know, that whistleblowers should be afforded. So I think it's all good, you know, in terms of where where we are sort of heading in on this topic.
It's always been the case that in the newsroom people call us, you know, but usually they call us and tell us, oh, there are four ambulances here, maybe there's a murder, you guys want to check it out, you know. But increasingly I'm finding that there's a little bit more, you know, nuance to what they are saying. For example, they might say, oh, this company, you know, might be doing this, etc., etc., you can check it out. I just feel that as people, especially as a younger cohort comes into the workplace, they do have a sense of, you know, very strong sense of justice, right and wrong. So it's going to be harder to do like bad things.
Yeah. Which is good in a
which
way.
Is
a
good, thing, right? Which is good,
yeah. But in that respect, then I tell you, I get whistleblowers all the time because they write into our Talking Point email and say, hey, this water filter, it says it can do this ABC. Can you check? I don't think it really can, you know. Or this milk powder claims it has these nutrients. I'm not sure. Can you check?
Okay, I think that's just feedback and story ideas for you.
Hey, but you know?
Yeah, so I think it's a good thing. It just that the onus on companies will be greater to protect the people who are trying to do the right thing.
Yeah, and I think it needs to be an option where if you want a whistleblower, you know where to go and you don't feel like there are certain consequences or repercussions if you report. We all need to be reassured that if I want to do the right thing, I should be able to do it safely without, you know, fear of harm to me.
Yeah,
to
I think
family.
That culture needs to change quite slowly.
Yeah,
but surely. Thank you. Okay. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
All right, guys. So this has been a deep dive. We hope you like what you're listening to. If you have any, you know, ideas, thoughts, do drop us a note. We always do love to hear from you. But otherwise, that's it for this week's episode.
Thanks to our team, Janaini Johari, Tiffany Ang, Joanne Chan, and Saya Wins. See you guys next week.
Bye for now.
Bye.